Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. Today we're going to be taking a look at Ginn v. United States, a Supreme Court case from 1915. It's a pretty important one when we talk about voting rights in America, and I'm really interested to unpack it with you all today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ginn v. United States is hugely significant. It's really where the Supreme Court started, you know, really taking a hard look at the intent behind state laws. Like, when a law appears neutral at first glance, but could actually have some discriminatory effects.
Right. So we're talking about Oklahoma in 1910, a few decades after the Civil War. They decided to add a literacy test to their state constitution for voting, which, you know, on its face doesn't sound so crazy. But then they add this thing called a grandfather clause, which I think is where things start to get a little dicey. So can you explain a bit about how this grandfather clause worked?
Oh, the grandfather clause. Yeah. It was clever, I'll give them that, but also incredibly insidious. Basically, it said that if your ancestors could vote before January 1st, 1866, then you didn't have to take the literacy test.
Okay, so why that specific date? It's not just a random date, right?
Definitely not. See, January 1st, 1866, that was before the 15th Amendment, the one that granted African American men the right to vote.
So the brilliance, or maybe the evil genius, of the grandfather clause is that it's pegged to a date before the 15th Amendment. It's essentially giving legal cover to disenfranchised black voters while appearing to be, you know, race neutral. So who are the guys at the center of this case? Frank Gwynn and J.J. Beal. What's their story?
Well, Gwynn and Beal were election officials down in Oklahoma. They were the ones tasked with actually enforcing this new law. And their actions during the election in 1910, well, they led to their conviction for conspiring to deprive citizens of their voting rights.
Wow. So their actions really sparked a legal battle that went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Exactly. It became this huge case.
So what did the Supreme Court ultimately have to decide? Did they think the grandfather clause was a violation of the 15th Amendment? Because on paper, it doesn't actually mention race.
Right. That's the trickiness of it. But Chief Justice White, he wrote the majority opinion, and he really focused on the intent and the effect of this law. He said, sure, states have the power to set voter qualifications, but they can't do it in a way that goes against the 15th Amendment, which guarantees equal voting rights.
So basically, he was saying Oklahoma was trying to pull a fast one. They were trying to skirt around the 15th Amendment with some clever wording.
You got it. The court wasn't fooled. They saw that this seemingly neutral literacy test, combined with the grandfather clause and that very specific date, was a clear attempt to disenfranchise black voters while protecting white voters.
This brings up an interesting point. Did the court decide that literacy tests in and of themselves were unconstitutional? Or was it specifically the grandfather clause that was the problem?
It's an important distinction. The court actually said that literacy tests by themselves weren't necessarily unconstitutional, as long as they were applied fairly without any discriminatory intent. The real issue was the grandfather clause. That's what turned a possibly neutral concept into a tool for disenfranchisement.
So it wasn't the literacy test itself, but how it was being used with that discriminatory add-on that was the problem. What kind of arguments did Oklahoma make to defend this law? They must have had some counter-arguments to these accusations of discrimination.
Oh, absolutely. Their main argument was that the law applied equally to everybody, regardless of race. They said, look, everyone has to take the literacy test, or they can rely on the grandfather clause. It's fair across the board.
Yeah, but we know that's not really the whole story.
Yeah.
The impact was clearly not equal. So how did the court address that argument? How did they respond to Oklahoma saying it applied to everyone equally?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. This is where the court's reasoning gets pretty fascinating, and it's had a huge impact on voting rights law ever since. They basically said, hey, just because a law looks neutral on the surface doesn't mean it can't have a discriminatory effect in reality. And that idea, that's the basis for what we call the effects test.
The effects test. Okay, so what does that actually mean? What does the effects test look at?
Well, it looks at whether a law, even if it doesn't specifically mention race, disproportionately impacts one racial group over another. If it does, then that can be evidence of discrimination. And you can use that to challenge the law. Ginn v. United States was a super important case for establishing that principle.
So it's a powerful tool to challenge laws that might seem race neutral, but have a very different impact in practice. So the Supreme Court struck down the grandfather clause in this case. Case closed, problem solved. Did this immediately change the landscape of voting rights?
I wish. It would be nice if it was that simple. But no, unfortunately, the immediate impact of Grin was actually pretty limited. You see, southern states especially were really, I mean, really committed to maintaining white supremacy and keeping black people from having political power.
So instead of just giving up, they found new ways to suppress the black vote. What kinds of tactics did they use?
Oh, it was like a game of whack-a-mole. As soon as one discriminatory tactic was struck down, something else would pop up. They started using things like poll taxes, you know, requiring people to pay to vote, which directly impacted poorer communities, and those were disproportionately black.
Right, and then there were the all-white primaries, where black voters were kept out of the primary elections, which basically decided the outcome of the general election anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And on top of that, they came up with these ridiculous understanding tests, you know, where potential voters had to interpret complicated legal documents or answer these random trivia questions. It was designed to be impossible to pass unless you were white.
It's crazy how they kept coming up with new ways to restrict voting. What about Oklahoma, though? Did they just give up after Gwynn? Or did they try to find ways to get around the ruling?
Oh, they got sneaky. They replaced the grandfather clause with something they called a permanent registration system. The idea was, if you registered to vote during the certain window of time, you were good for life. But the catch, that window of time just happened to be when the grandfather clause was still in effect.
Ah, so they were trying to permanently lock out black voters who weren't able to register because of the grandfather clause.
Yep, that was the plan. They thought they could outsmart the court, but they were wrong. This new system was challenged, and it actually went all the way up to the Supreme Court in Lane v. Wilson in 1939.
So a sequel to the Ginn case, what happened in Lane v. Wilson?
The court saw right through it. They realized Oklahoma was just trying to continue the discrimination from the grandfather clause, and they struck down the permanent registration system too.
So even though Ginn maybe didn't have a massive immediate impact, it provided the legal framework and the precedent for challenging discriminatory voting practices in the future.
That's right. It really cemented that essential principle that we can't just look at what a law says. We have to look at how it actually works in the real world. And if it has discriminatory effects, that's a huge problem.
So how does all of this connect to today, over a century later? I mean, it's easy to think that we've moved past these blatant attempts to suppress the vote, right?
I wish I could say that. But unfortunately, Gwynn's legacy is still very relevant. A lot of the voting laws that are being debated right now, they echo those Jim Crow era tactics we were just talking about. Things like voter ID laws, restrictions on early voting, purges of voter rolls. These can all have a disproportionate impact on minority voters.
So even we don't have grandfather clauses anymore, or outright bans on black people voting, these newer laws can still have discriminatory effects. And Gwynn v. United States gave us the tools to challenge them.
Absolutely. Grin sets that precedent that we can't just take things at face value. We have to ask, what's the real purpose behind this law? Who does it actually affect? And if the answers to those questions point to racial discrimination, then we need to challenge it.
What about people who say that voter ID laws are just common sense? You need to show ID for all sorts of things.
That's a common argument, but it kind of misses the point. Sure, we use ID for lots of things, but voting is a fundamental right. And the barriers to using that right should be as low as possible. And if you look at the evidence, voter fraud, especially the kind that these laws are supposed to prevent, is incredibly rare.
So if the reasons for these laws are weak and they disproportionately hurt minority voters, it seems like the spirit of Ginn v. United States is really important for these legal battles happening today.
I think so, yeah. Gwynn tells us to be skeptical, to question why these seemingly neutral laws exist, and to be vigilant about protecting the right to vote for everybody.
Okay, so we've talked about Ginn's impact and how it connects to voting rights today. But were there any criticisms of the Ginn decision itself? Did the court make any mistakes?
Yeah, one of the main criticisms is that, well, they didn't go far enough. You see, by leaving literacy tests in place as, you know, an acceptable voter qualification, even without the grandfather clause, they kind of left a loophole, a way for discrimination to potentially continue.
Right. So it was a big step forward, but not a complete victory.
Mm.
There was still that possibility for states to manipulate those literacy tests in a discriminatory way.
Exactly. I mean, Gwynn v. United States was a landmark case, no doubt. It made us look beyond the surface of laws, you know, and examine what they actually do, how they play out in reality. But it's also a reminder that sometimes legal victories can be chipped away at. Progress can be slow. And the fight for equal voting rights, it's never truly over. We always have to be vigilant.
It's a bit of a sobering thought, but important nonetheless. As we're wrapping up this deep dive into Ginn v. United States, what's the biggest takeaway you'd want our listeners to remember?
I think the most important takeaway is this. We have to protect the right to vote. It's a right that so many people have fought for, and it's been challenged over and over again throughout our history. Ginn teaches us to be aware, to recognize how discrimination can show up, even in laws that look neutral on the surface, and to be ready to challenge those laws whenever we see them.
It's a responsibility we all share, not just legal experts. We all have to stay informed, be involved in our communities, and stand up for what's right.
Absolutely. Ginn v. United States reminds us that the fight for equal voting rights, it didn't end in 1915 or with any other single victory. It's an ongoing process. And we all need to play a part in making sure every citizen's voice is heard and that our democracy really represents the will of the people.
Well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Ginn v. United States. We hope you found it informative and, you know, something to think about. We'll leave you with a question. How do those legal principles that came out of Ginn apply to the voting laws that are being debated today? And what might happen to our democracy if we don't learn from history? Until next time.